and welcome to Is That What I Call Music, our podcast about the Now That's What I Call Music albums. We're going to do a mini episode about Eurovision.
Yeah, the confession I suppose we should make at the start of this is that neither of us are huge fans of Eurovision.
I get the sense I've possibly watched it more. I don't think I follow it with any sense
no,
of,
you don't
know,
tune in for the semi-finals and no. things like
well,
that.
Well, even then, sometimes, if I happen, okay, well. If I happen to be in and I'm not doing anything, yeah. I might have a look.
Okay. I look up some of the songs like after the finals and things, the yeah. ones that did well, to see what people liked or if there's anything which people deemed especially comical. But I think the last one I actually watched was when the Guar ripoffs won, Lordi.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of thought, well, that's Eurovision finished now. That's like the series finale. It's
and
not going to get any sillier than this.
That must be, what, over 10 years ago now?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I'm not a Eurovision fan, really. I used to watch it with my parents as a kid, enjoy Terry Wogan's commentaries and the badly translated lyrics on CIFA.
Likewise. And I think, for some reason, I have a particular fond memories of just the voting bits.
Okay.
Of the show. So particularly from when I was quite little, I don't know how much of the music I would take in, but I just found it fascinating, all the numbers
yeah,
coming up from
yeah.
the different countries.
The competition of it all, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a tension on who will get the 12s. Will anyone give UK something?
And I think the earliest ones where I remember the music are just, I seem to remember the early 90s ones vaguely, where it was people like Michael Ball and Sonia representing the UK. But I don't remember a lot else about the Eurovisions that year. Just...
No, yeah. I remember some of the ones we're going to talk about today. Yeah. And that's probably about it. There's as far as we can tell, 5 points where Eurovision and Now That's What I Call Music intersect, at least on the numbered Now albums. There was a couple I found on the other editions, like on Now That's What I Call Britain has the insipid Love Will Set You Free by Engelbert Humperdinck from 2012,
yeah.
which was rightly derided by the rest of the continent. And Hold Me Now by Johnny Logan, an Irish song, one of not very many non-UK ones which have appeared on Now, is on Now 100 Hit Power Ballads. But we're going to leave those aside.
Yeah, they're not the proper Now, really,
yeah,
are
and
they?
And focus on the Now's proper, beginning with Now 31, rather, and Love City Groove by Love City Groove.
Yeah.
Say, but I don't think it's the worst of the songs we're about to listen to necessarily. I don't know, maybe it
well,
is.
Well, it's not great.
It's no, it's very sort of cringy 90s rap. And like with that embarrassing thing where they're trying to sound like they're from California,
yeah,
but they're not. And
no.
the chorus is awful.
It is, isn't it? and the thing is, I'm reticent to insult it too much when I know what other Eurovision songs are
yes,
out there.
Yes, well, yeah.
I mean, it hasn't got an awful lot of competition.
No, well, it's kind of interesting, I guess. Like, has rap featured very often in the world of Eurovision, especially
is,
in the 90s?
I don't know, but then my memory of songs where they didn't either win or represent
yes,
the UK
yeah,
is
enough.
Probably pretty minimal, so I don't know if
so there may have been some dodgy German rap in
it
the
could
90s
well be.
Or something, but it sort of feels like it's a relatively adventurous option.
Yeah.
Even if it is in a sort of trying desperately to be cool and failing kind of way.
I mean, in a sea of ballads in Europe.
Yes, exactly.
it is something a bit different. And
so we
maybe
can give
that's...
them credit for trying something.
Yeah, and it is one I've generally always remembered. I don't know how favourably necessarily, but it, you know, it's not one I've forgotten. And I
yeah.
guess in that sense.
It seems the rest of Europe wasn't overly impressed. Well, it finished 10th, which I guess isn't too bad.
Yeah, considering recent years.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the UK would dream of 10th these days.
And it got to number 7 in the UK singles
yeah,
chart.
So it did okay,
yeah.
really. Kind of modestly successful.
This came out, this was Eurovision 1995.
Mm.
And it was written by a bloke called Stephen Beans Rudden, who was a staff writer at Warner Chappell, and he sort of, a bunch of other people he's worked with at various points, got them all together and made this song. I don't think they made it with Eurovision in mind. I think it was just a bunch of sort of music industry insiders deciding that they wanted to be pop stars instead and not really working out, because this one was a top 10 single, but the follow-ups Soft Spot and JUMP both missed out on the chart, and then they split from a record label and returned with a cover of the track I Found Lovin', which failed as well, so they split up. And that's the history of Love City Groove. Yep. It's definitely not the way to sort of launch a credible hip-hop career.
No.
It's by a Eurovision. But, you know, it could probably be worse. Maybe we need to credit now here, because we have listened to a fair number of other UK Eurovision entries in the last couple of weeks, and there's a reason maybe that now decided not to have them on the albums. There's a couple, like Katrina and the Waves seems like an odd...
Yeah, an odd absence.
Yeah.
Although I do have it on just another compilation thing of the time. So,
so maybe it just couldn't license it.
Yeah, okay, maybe it's more that than anything else.
In the grand scheme of UK Eurovision entrants, this is, you know, it's much better than Daz Sampson.
Well, yes.
If we use Daz Sampson as our benchmark for what a UK Eurovision entrant is, because I think Daz Sampson is at least better than Engelbert Humperdinck's.
Well, one. Yeah, but then I guess a lot
for
of things
pure
are
pure entertainment
better.
Value. So, you know, we'll use that as our benchmark for minimum acceptable quality for a UK Eurovision song. And then this one, it's significantly above that, even if it's not actually a very good song. So maybe we should just move on to the next year, in fact, isn't
it? Yes, so we have Gina G next with Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gina G.
Yeah, I feel fondly for the song, but I don't know how much that reflects its actual quality. It's very archetypal 90s dance music.
Yeah, and I seem to remember this one bringing Eurovision into more of a limelight for a few years.
To a certain extent, maybe the fact that Love City Groove was actually a top 10 song as well.
Hmm.
Maybe they began this process. One thing we haven't talked about, I guess, is the history of Eurovision, because I guess the classic period of Eurovision is pre now.
Oh yeah.
So this is why there's like not that many songs on the numbered now albums from Eurovision, is because like the really big days of when Eurovision was relatively taken seriously, 60s, even 70s, in the UK,
really.
Were well behind us by the time that now came along. And like, I guess there was a bit of a 90s, mid to late 90s resurgence, and then that began with Love City Groove, and Gina G was the one who was like the very successful one, because this song was successful.
Did we think prior to this, the last UK winner was Bucks Fizz in 1981, and I can't immediately remember the UK entries in the rest of the 80s and so on, but it didn't seem like the UK did much, and maybe that resulted in a lack of prominence of whatever the entries were in the chart.
But Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit is a song that was everywhere. I was saying,
it
I
was
have
number one.
Memories of dancing to it in the village hall in Crewe's Mortchard.
It's quite an image.
At a disco.
Likewise, I remember it. You know,
it was also a number one in Israel, apparently, but it was peaked at number 12 on the Billboard Hot 100. But this is Gina G in America. Who would have thought this would cross over?
The fact that it even did as well as that seems faintly astonishing, really.
Yeah.
You know, it was ubiquitous at the time. It was eighth that
I'm
year.
I'm almost a bit surprised, but I guess I remember it being a big hit in the UK rather than it being a massive success on Eurovision. And certainly, if you look up the Eurovision performance, it's kind of comical, because it's Gina D and two frenetic dancers, one of whom later went on to be one of Girls Aloud's songwriters, if I remember rightly. But then, like, because there was some rule about all the instruments involved in writing a song had to be on stage at that time in Eurovision, so just in the background there's like a couple of old PCs sitting there, like, cause it's mostly electronic, and it's just I don't know if they've still got
that
rule
in place.
They
didn't like cover them in glitter or
make them somehow. No, this is it. They didn't seem to make a lot of effort to you dress it up. It's a very minimal production with frenetic dancing and singing and beeping, which is all you really need from a song like this, I guess. But apparently her dress, if you do look up the Eurovision performance, was originally custom made for Cher by Paco Rabanne. Cher left it sort of hanging in the office at Warner Brothers until Gina G just sort of found it a few days before the performance.
Yeah, I'll have that then.
Yeah, and it was shortened a bit. And so, yeah, she's wearing a remarkably expensive dress, but Cher didn't want during that performance as well, while dancing in front of two computers. But yeah, like the song in itself, like I say, I've got a great fondness for it. And I think in terms of doing what it sets out to do, which is to be a sort of cheesy Euro dance style pop song, it's entirely adequate. It's a very specific style of music, and it's not one which is necessarily dated that well. But if you have nostalgia for 90s dance music, I'm pretty sure Gina G will be in your playlist somewhere.
Yeah, you know, and it's fun enough, isn't it? I can't say I tend to choose to listen to it, but at the same time, yeah, I think similarly, I have a certain fondness for it. It's fine for what it is.
And she did actually have other UK hits as well.
She did.
Which makes her unlike Love City Groove. She also attempted to re-enter Eurovision in 2005 with a song called Flashback, which apparently finished 5th out of 5 in the pre-selection program.
Yeah, so not a great sign for...
Yeah, I didn't actually look that one up. Maybe it was too good for Eurovision. Maybe. You can give Gina G the benefit.
Although I'm
of
sure it was around then that Daz Sampson was...
Well, how can you compete against teenage life?
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost a shame that we're not going to talk about that song in more depth.
Oh, in fact, she competed against Javine and Katie Price.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
The next one, like we hinted at before, it skips over Katrina in the waves. Yeah. It doesn't make a now appearance.
No, and that one, like, that got to, like, number 2 in in the contest.
Oh, no, it won Katrina
the
in the waves. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it topped the charts in the UK. I think it, like, made number 2 or 3 or something. But
we have no reason to talk about it.
No.
So instead, we're jumping ahead to 1998 and Now 40, which features Where Are You by Imani.
So Imani, who was second in 1998.
Like, this is objectively a better song than either of the two we've heard so far. If only because she can really sing.
Yeah, at the very least she can sing a lot
like,
better.
Like, compare this to the chorus from Love City Groove, just in terms of that vocal, and it's hard not to think, this is a proper song.
Yeah.
Almost too good for Eurovision. It reminds me, like, a little bit of various other songs we've chatted about on the podcast.
Yeah,
like,
but for me, particularly Alternato.
Oh, yeah, well, there's that, but also the likes of, you know, the Diana Ross and Janet Jackson songs, which these fairly soulful songs which just have this awful processed dance beat underneath. But like this in particular, I think feels like it shouldn't have that underneath. It would
be just
a
this weird
song.
Attempt to try and contemporize it somehow. It's a painfully late 90s beat.
Yeah, but at the same time it got to number 2 in the Eurovision Song Contest, but only number 15 in the charts, which is kind of inverse of what we've seen with the other ones, where the chart performance was better than the Eurovision performance, which is odd given that this is definitely a better song by most objective standards, surely.
Yeah.
It's less novelty-ish, I guess, and maybe that's counted against it in the charts.
And it's one that I don't tend to remember with any particular fondness. I mean, I remember it being out and it being the entrant, but...
I think that's because it does sound more like the rest of the charts at the time, whereas Love City Groove and Gina G both have a massive cheese quality. So that makes them more memorable, perhaps. And yeah, I guess that's a sort of interesting point in itself, is that what do you want from a Eurovision song?
Well, exactly.
Ultimately, maybe you just want cheese, especially from a UK entry, I think. And on that level, I don't think this sort of ticks the boxes, because it's quite tonally serious.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at the lyrics, but I imagine the Where Are You is a sort of lovelorn thing rather than it sang from the point of a child who's lost in a shopping centre or something. Maybe it could be. But you know what I mean. It's tonally very different than Ooh Ah just a little bit, however you spin it.
And it seemed that she didn't have much success at all, really, after this.
No.
Looking at how how there was a planned follow-up single that was pulled in 1999. EMI decided not to release it. There wasn't really a lot that's happened since. She didn't release a debut album until 2014.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of interesting to know, isn't it?
So, you know, she's clearly been, I mean, maybe not, maybe she's had a lot of time off, but I was going to say she's clearly been sort of plugging away.
Yeah,
music.
At a glance, it looks like she's done guest vocals here and there on things, essentially, in the meantime, rather than doing much.
I guess if she is mostly a vocalist rather than a songwriter, because she didn't write this, I don't think, did she? No, composed by Scott English, Phil Manikiza, and Simon Sterling. And maybe if she's a vocalist, you know, to be the sort of headline artist on a song, you need to be working with the right producers and songwriters. Mm. And if she's not had those opportunities for whatever reason, it does seem a bit unfair though. But yeah, why, if she had the sort of record deal, how come Gina G got a chance to have a proper pop career and Imani didn't, based on their respective singing talents?
Yeah, it's
I don't know.
Fascinating.
We could
in a
start
way.
Sort of conspiracy theory stuff about the UK music industry and their attitudes towards black women, maybe. But that's probably require a little more research before we could comment usefully on that. It's a shame though, because yeah, I think if anyone out of the, certainly out of the UK ones we're talking about here, deserves a proper pop career, it's probably Imani, based on her voice alone.
Yeah, out of the ones at least we'll talk about in this episode.
And
definitely,
this song does seem to be sort of relatively well remembered in certain circles. Yeah. Like in 2014, the official UK charts inducted the song into its Pop Gem Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Praising her powerhouse vocals and saying it's the UK's best Eurovision entry in 16 years. In July 2017, so even more recent, the Eurovision Song Contest said it was the sixth best UK Eurovision song of all time.
Wow.
So that's including the long pre-now period.
But
and
if you think,
Telegraph also put it at number 18 in a ranking of every Eurovision submission.
If you think it was second, and I'm not sure immediately how many times UK have won.
Oh no, well, there was a thing I did read. It was the UK's 15th entry to get to number 2. And it's also the last time so far the UK has got to number 2. And this is something worth dwelling on at least momentarily, I guess, because this was the last one before the rules changed in Eurovision.
Yes.
Because originally Eurovision was anyone can sing in whatever language they want. Mm. And then they started introducing in various stages like rules about you can only sing in one of your country's official languages, or you can, it's got to be mostly in your country's language, but you can have like one line in English plus the title, I think was one of the rules at one point. But that changed in 1999 when it was open to everyone again, and then anyone could sing in whatever language they want. And so one of the things that Eurovision scholars, if there is such a thing, say is that that sort of gave the UK an advantage for a long time, because English is such a widely spoken language.
Yeah.
Whereas definitely, when you level the playing field and allow other people to sing bits in English and things, suddenly the fact that you're singing in English isn't an advantage anymore. And thus, you no longer
you
get
no
a sort
longer
of
have
boost
that, yeah,
to your position. So everything since then, we've been going on musical strength alone, and it hasn't been enough. But you know, Eurovision as well, one of the things that people enjoy about it is obviously the petty politics. So I'm sure there's various geopolitical factors as well as the rule changes. Which
like if you think Terry Wogan was kind of known for his reasons for leaving mainly being around the political voting.
Oh, really?
Saying that it seemed increasingly pointless as a voting system when...
I guess. I never got the impression he was entirely on board with it to begin with, but hey, it's as good a reason for leaving as any, isn't it? Like, there's all sorts of reasons, I guess, that the UK haven't had a winner or even a number two since Imani, but I think partly our penchant for terrible novelty songs is to blame, partly for rule changes, and partly the fact that the UK obviously does almost everything it can to snub Europe at every opportunity.
Well,
in
there is
very
that
dramatic fashion in the last few years.
So yes, it is intriguing to see how that'll go this year. But
yeah. But anyway, this one though, I think it's, you know, as a late 90s dance pop song, it's entirely acceptable, even outside of the context of Eurovision, which is not necessarily something you say, like Love City Groove. I think as a Eurovision song, it's kind of interesting. As a song in itself, it's entirely dismissible trash. Whereas this one, if this was was like on the radio in the 90s, it would have just blended in with everything
else.
Yeah,
you know, it sounds like pop of the time.
But
really,
it's faint praise to say that it would be unremarkable in the charts.
Yeah. Well, in Eurovision terms, that's probably an accolade.
The fact that it sounds like a proper pop song is actually big Eurovision praise.
Oh, yeah.
And again, we're using Daz Sampson as our benchmark.
What a benchmark.
Yes.
Is and, Daz Sampson.
You know, if you're not sure what we mean by sounding like a proper song, go listen to Teenage Life by Daz Sampson and then come back and listen to Amali and you go, oh, okay, this is a song.
Yeah. So it just, if you hear for yourselves what has been possible in Eurovision, then...
But anyway, we should move on to our last UK entry, I guess.
Yes, so we have Precious next. So it's the next year, 99, mm-hmm. and this was their hit with Say It Again. I know it's hard for you. Sometimes you gotta let the feeling through. I wanna know exactly how you feel. Oh yeah. I've tried to be patient and give you a little more time. Now I need to be sure. So, Precious.
One thing we should probably do immediately, because I was saying, praising the last one in the faint way by saying it was sort of blended in with everything else on the radio, sounded like a proper song. And at the same time, this does sound like it's sort of a really generic cookie cutter pop song from the late 90s. Like, they basically took some of All Saints DNA and sort of tried to grow it in a test tube, and this is what came out. But, like, I wouldn't say that works in its favour, where it's like, because Imani is, Where Are You is a sort of relatively generic dance pop song, which is sort of dragged up a bit by having a good vocalist. Whereas this is just a generic song with nothing else going for it.
No, it just sounds exactly like an All Saints ripoff in a way, short of wearing combats.
Again, this did worse in Eurovision than Where Are You.
At 12th, Marmy. Joint 12th.
But it also did better in the UK charts.
Yeah, it got to number 6.
So I'm starting to think that maybe the problem is us, not Eurovision.
It does seem that the better it does in the UK charts, the worse it does in Eurovision.
Yeah. Although, to be fair to the British record-buying public, they didn't actually give Precious a prolonged pop career. The Wikipedia page for Precious is worth looking up, because it has that vibe being written by the ex-president of the Precious fan club.
It's quite a read.
It begins by saying, achieved fame as the UK's entry for Eurovision Song Contest in 1999 and went on to become a moderately popular act until the group disbanded in 2000. But then later on it does mention that their debut album failed to chart, selling fewer than 600 copies.
Equals moderately popular.
Yeah, like I guess if I'd sold 600 copies of an album, I'd think I'm doing all right, but that's because I don't think of myself as having a pop career.
Just the idea of moderately successful.
I'm not, you know, I'm not a record industry insider, so I don't know the average sales of a pop group in terms of their debut album. You know, somebody must have lost their job if they signed this band to an album, because 600 copies seems like nothing. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in 1999, maybe selling sales, 600 copies.
Well, yeah, maybe sales were so poor of music generally.
Napster had taken over so much that everyone was downloading the Precious album instead. I have no idea. But yeah, it's a trash generic pop song, and I don't know, there's a huge amount to say about it, to be honest. But it was the last that Now would have so far of UK entries
in the, you know, the classic numbered Now album.
And like we mentioned earlier, Engelbert snuck his way onto Now That's What I Call Britain. Since then, no UK entry has made it onto a Now album as far as we can tell, unless we've missed anything. If we have, at Now Music Pod on Twitter and let us know.
There is one more Eurovision song.
There is one more Eurovision song, and I was just about to get onto that, but it is not from the UK. It is from Sweden, who have, I think it's fair to say, a stronger Eurovision pedigree. It's a song from 2012. It's called Euphoria and it's by Loreen.
So, Loreen.
From 2012, the winner.
Yeah.
A total of 372 points, the then second highest point total in the contest history. So it was a pretty big hit.
Yeah, and seemingly it was a very successful song in charts around Europe. It was a hit here.
Well, it also received the highest number of 12-point scores in the Eurovision for any song in the contest history of 18 countries, giving it 12 points. So I guess that boded well for its widespread chart success.
Yeah, so it's easy to see why it made it to now, for the first time for a Eurovision song in years. And like we were saying about it, it seems like, although it's obviously relatively recent, it's only, 7 years old.
Yeah, well, it's quite, I guess this is a thing worth sort of focusing on for a moment, because Precious was 1999, so this is 13 years later.
Yeah.
And there's been a massive evolution in the sound of pop music in that period.
Mm.
One thing we should probably address is the fact neither of us are necessarily very well versed on chart music from 2012. So
no.
It sounds like it wouldn't be entirely out of place on a modern Now album, potentially.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we were more into modern pop music, maybe we think that's a ridiculous statement. It sounds so 2012.
Yeah.
It's so dated now.
Yeah.
But it sounds fresher to me than Precious.
Although, like I was saying to you, it didn't help that when we were watching the Precious video, it's a really low-res upload.
Well, true. They've got an HD video for Loreen's Euphoria as well, which maybe helps. I don't think it's like a great song, but it's again very good at doing what it does.
Yeah.
And like Imani, she can clearly fucking sing, which makes a difference, I think. Like, you wouldn't be able to get away with a song like this unless you had the voice to back it up.
No.
And I think she does. And like, because in the live one as well, she's really belting it out. She's got some power there. It's a proper song again, rather than a sort of generic cookie cutter nonsense thing or a novelty song.
Yeah, and I think there's the same for some years. I mean, as we mentioned, and obviously Sweden have quite some pedigree of Eurovision, but it seems like for some time they tend to do these kinds of songs more, although there could be generally most countries are trying to do these days.
Yeah.
But I think this has been Sweden's approach for some time.
Okay.
Is that just... They've won several in recent years.
Do you mean like stylistically?
Yeah.
Or...
I'd say stylistically.
But is that just what all Swedish pop music is like? Or...
Well, yeah, I guess I'm not familiar enough with...
This is one of the tricky things, I suppose, because when we're talking about the Swedish entry, because we were looking at her later career, and she's not had like other UK hits after this.
No.
And not had too many sort of massive hits even in Sweden.
No.
But she sort of appeared in various sort of interesting, like, arty projects where she was part of Art on Ice. And it's like, it's very difficult for us to know culturally. Is that like a big thing in Sweden where it's figure skating combined with singing?
No idea.
Is this like something you do when the money's drying up and you've got some bills to pay?
Mm.
And it's like, we don't have the context to know really how Loreen's career has panned out since then. But she seems to still be working and making music and things, which is more than was always the case for some of the artists we've looked at today. And I think it's again just of a sort of higher production quality than a lot of the stuff we've listened to.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
Might again just be a case of
this being more recent.
Yeah, and it's just much easier to have a big polished song than it was in 1996 or whatever, that Gina G was dealing with two computers sat in the background of her performance. Take the fact that this sounds much better than some of the others with a pinch of salt, because it's a lot later and things have changed. The musical landscape has changed, and it comes from Sweden, who actually give a damn about Eurovision and would never dream of entering Bear Samson.
I think they have quite a high budget for these things, and it's interesting reading because she tried to represent Sweden again in 2017, ultimately lost out in the contest they have. But just reading the process of at what point she was eliminated suggests quite a complex system.
Yeah, well, it's a very long thing, but it was one of the, we were talking about the rule changes earlier, and there was one of prior rule changes where Germany and Sweden, I think, were exempt because their selection process was already so far along, because they've got a very long process.
Mm.
So by the time the rule changes were announced, they'd already had, you know, narrowed down the field of these entrants, which some of them broke the rules at that point, but it's like, we can't find a new song now, guys. We've been doing this for a year. So yeah, Sweden... and certainly some other countries, more so than the UK, have these elaborate big selection processes. And Loreen actually had her origins in a Idol 2004. It does make you kind of curious as to how the Swedish versions of those shows compare to the UK ones. Whether they take those more seriously as well, and it's not just a freak show. It's an odd one as well, because like a lot of the things we've said with like Gina G is a personal fondness for the songs, whereas like this one, I don't think I'd really, I don't know if I heard it in 2012, maybe I didn't,
I saw it that year. Kind of remember it, but the fact that it hasn't retained any particular special place.
No, what was it? I think the nearest thing we have to a personal connection with the song is realizing that Loreen herself, her first song after the TV competition called The Snake, was done with Robin Raz.
Oh yes.
Who Dave and I remember from Now 39 Part 2, and Lutricia McNeil, who also had her first single.
Yeah.
So Robin Raz, if nothing else, they're clearly star makers in Sweden.
Good old Robin
Maybe
Raz.
We'll have to sort of dig into the Now history and see how much involvement Robin Raz have had, maybe.
Yeah.
Because this is the second time they've popped up, and certainly when we first came across them, we were very much, no interest in any of that at all. I can't feel too much about this song because it does sound like a lot of other sort of big, euphoric, dramatic dance music, but it sounds like a decent example of it, and she can sing. During Eurovision 2012, she was because that was held in Azerbaijan, and she was the only entrant to meet with local human rights activists, and she told reporters that human rights are violated in Azerbaijan every day. One should not be silent about such things. So she's got a conscience.
I
don't know if Gina G has done a lot of activism.
No. I don't think she's known for it.
No. So Loreen as well, like, there's various things that are kind of intriguing about her, but this song, despite its massive success in Eurovision and in the charts around Europe, doesn't really hold any special place in my heart or anything, and I can't imagine I'm going to return to it. I'm much more likely to listen to Ua just a little bit again at some point in the future than I am this.
Yeah, I think I just would describe it as merely competent.
Yes, very competent though.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very high degree of competence, which could not be said for, say, Love City Groove or Precious. Or even maybe Gina G. So, you know, top marks for actual effort, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's the end of our selection of Eurovision songs. But I think it, for me at least, putting aside personal fondness for Gina G, it would probably be this or Imani, and I'm not really sure which, being like the best song.
For me, this, I would say this is probably slightly better than Imani, but
feels less dated.
Yeah, well, there is that. Like I say, Imani just reminds me too much of Alternata.
Fair enough. So in our mini Now Eurovision, we're crowning Loreen again. Although, in terms of personal fondness, it's always going to be Gina G, but that's
obviously
to do with really liking 90s dance music when I was a kid. And the little Now Eurovision sweepstakes, Loreen is definitely the winner, and maybe that will bode for this upcoming Eurovision. I'd certainly be more willing to put my money on whatever Sweden is entering than the UK one.
I won't give up and I won't let go, cause this kind of love is gonna be
So yes, Michael Rice's Bigger Than Us.
Yes. I think he did come from one of the X Factor type shows.
One of them.
The Voice.
The Voice,
something
maybe.
Like that. And it sounds very much like one of those songs and one of those singers. It's really something that has fucked pop music in a way, because there's only one kind of voice that exists in so many pop artists now, and it's that big voice which sounds good when you're standing in front of a panel doing a cappella warbling in front of Simon fucking Cowell.
I just read it's sorry to interrupt. He won the first series of All Together Now.
I think he described that to me when this came up before, in fact, and it's a show where there's like 100 people singing along or something. But he won the first series of that, but didn't he previously appear
he previously
on something
appeared
else as
in
well?
He entered season 11 of the X Factor in 2014.
Fair enough. There you go.
He was eliminated following the boot camp stage.
One of those shows. But now, here on the back of All Together ever now, he is representing us on the European stage with a generic self-esteem anthem.
Yep.
Yeah, and I guess, because you were saying it could have almost been our entry at any time in the last 20 years since these kind of shows rolled around.
It just sounds so pop idol-y, X-Factory.
But I do think it's a bit more recent in its sort of...
in its tone?
Uplifting sort of vibe. It's kind of a post-Greatest Showman, post-Katy Perry, hey, the world's big, but we'll survive because you're strong and great kind of vibe, you know?
The song may as well have been called that.
But
I'd have given it more credit if it was.
I don't know. Like, I've not been paying enough attention to Eurovision in later years to know how this kind of song will perform, but my imagination is it's going to come in like 14th or something because it's just a nothing. It's not bad enough to be like nobody is going to give it any points at all.
I don't know if I kind of assume you won't remember how the previous entry went last year's Suri. Although she didn't, I don't think she quite came from the X Factor mold, but essentially it was a similar tone kind of a song, and I think it finished one from bottom.
Okay, so maybe it will do worse than I'm anticipating.
Yeah, I kind of envision this being similarly low ranked. Okay. I mean, I haven't heard any of the other entrants, but...
No, but it's the thing, isn't it? Like, it's not going to win just because it's the best of a bad loss. That's not how the Eurovision works. If there's nothing which is genuinely good, then the weirdest song wins.
Yeah.
I refer you back to Lordi. So, and this isn't going to win on that basis.
No.
It's not memorable enough for anyone to give a shit about it. So we can probably write off the UK in the Eurovision finals. Yeah. But, you know, maybe there'll be something a bit more interesting. Maybe I'll actually tune in this year and see what's going on. Or maybe I'll do what I usually do and listen to the winner on YouTube the day after. But for now, at least, I think we can end our tour of Now in Eurovision. And maybe if Michael Rice makes it onto Now 103, which seems unlikely. But you never know. Maybe we'll have another reason to talk about Eurovision and him again. But I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think we'll probably never think about or mention Michael Rice ever again in our lives.
We'll forget what his name is as soon as we stop recording.
Yes. So anyway, enjoy all the cheesy Europop.
Yeah, have fun.
And we'll be back for another podcast at some point in the future, maybe.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Is That What I Call Music? If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at
davidsband@gmail.com,
or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at
Now Music Pod.